Good morning and welcome to WGTD and this, our Saturday morning program, Community Matters. I'm Linda Fleshensky, the host for this week's edition of Community Matters. It is a special honor for me today to have with us the Honorable John T. Dickert, Mayor of the City of Racine. As our listeners no doubt know, Mayor Dickert will be leaving the mayorship this summer in order to take a position as President of the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Cities Initiative. Mayor Dickert was first elected mayor in May of 2009. He was re-elected in 2011 and again in 2015. So today gives us a special opportunity to talk with the mayor as he reflects on what have been the major accomplishments during his tenure, his thoughts about the present and future of Racine and Wisconsin, and what interest and passion prompted him to accept his new position. Welcome, Mayor Dickert, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
I want to just start with a little kind of retrospective looking back, and you could answer this, probably take an hour to answer it, but just in a short form. Being mayor, what have been the greatest joys of doing that job, and what have been some of the greatest challenges?
Probably the greatest joys are, you know, we started out with a game plan, and we really wanted to change and make things happen for Racine, because when we started in 2009, we were in pretty rough shape. We had the highest unemployment and crime in the state. Poverty was at an all-time high. Housing was just in horrible, horrible mess from the housing crisis. So we really wanted to make a change. And when you start seeing those things changing over the years, and you start seeing this dramatic impact that you and all your staff members and department heads and NGOs and everybody else is having, you start realizing, okay, you can do something. You can do something positive in the world. And to see that the results now after 8 years, I look back and say to myself, okay, we did okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we did what we said we were going to do, and that's the beauty. The challenge is really what it does to your family and friends. Mm-hmm. We are in an era unlike anything I've ever seen in politics, and I've been in local, state, and federal government for 35 years. It is a horrible place to be right now for elected officials, and I mean that in all sense of the word, because for some reason people have felt emboldened to attack you, mm-hmm, on a level that I've never seen, from, you know, threats to our family and myself to threats to aldermen and any elected official, and you've been there, Linda, you've, mm-hmm, seen what it's like, but it's never been like it is today. And I don't know why people think they can be emboldened to say horrible, crass, and literally threatening things to people, but it needs to stop. Uh-huh. You know, we need to get back to a civil society where we actually debate issues, and they're not thrown out or accepted because they're Democrat or Republican, but because they're good. Yeah. The one place that I do see that, and the one modicum of sanity that is in the world of mayors. We work very well together. We work across party lines, and we work to get things done. So as crazy as the world is out there, the one place where there is sanity is still in the mayors and, mm-hmm, local government.
And it is amazing. I think some of it is the anonymity that's out there on the internet. I was working at Unified in my position there and got a call from a principal one day, and he said, "You better look at the online site, da-da-da-da." And it was just horrible. And I called them and said, "How can you put this up?" And, you know, they said it's just open to anybody to put what they want. And it was really an attack on family is what, yeah, it was. And it's very hard. It's hard enough when it's an attack on you. But when it's an attack on your family, a family member, it's really hard.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that I don't read or watch too much, mm-hmm, news. I don't go online. I post positive things online, and then I just kind of leave them out there, because the fact is, if you go back through comments nowadays, you're right. People are anonymous. And I've actually gone up and challenged some of the people that I found out were saying things, and I will tell you, they can't look you in the eye and they won't, mm-hmm, talk to you,
yeah,
because they don't have the guts to do it, you know, in front of you. And that anonymity and the sheer volume of social media right now allows people to throw a lot of rocks, which is really unfortunate.
It is.
Because the reality is we have so much of a short time frame to get things done that what I found is me and my family, we don't watch social media. We don't listen to it. We don't watch the news. We don't listen to the news. We have very limited amounts of news that we watch. And But we focus on the positive things, mm-hmm. and we bring positive people around us. All those folks that do that negative stuff, I push them aside because they're not there to help, and mm-hmm. we need to help build a better future.
Absolutely. I was advised when I ran for office by a representative, don't go on media like that because it just pulls you, it can pull you down.
Oh, yeah.
And also, it's important to focus on the positive. And I think
Absolutely.
That's one of your strengths as mayor, to tell you the truth, is you're such a cheerleader for Racine, and that's been a huge asset in your position,
Thank you.
When you became mayor in 2009, I think 12 other people ran, or 13.
Yeah, it was a big race.
It must have been daunting to win. Exciting, but daunting. And you began a 10-year plan, and one of the goals was to make Racine one of the best cities in America within 10 years. I always like lofty goals, because I think mm-hmm. if you set lofty goals, you get higher than you probably would have done. But regarding that plan, what did it entail, and how successful do you feel?
Well, when I was looking at this new position and they had made the offer, I went back through the 10-year plan after meeting with my family and asking them what they thought about, you know, taking on a new job. And about 98% of it is done. So the biggest goals that we had was jobs, crime, and housing. We were at 17% unemployment. Our goal was to get it to 1990 levels, which is 4%, which is where we're at now. Crime, we were the worst per capita in the state of Wisconsin. I said we've got to change that and eradicate gangs in the city of Racine. We're at a 52-year low in part one. We're at a historic all-time record low in part two. And for the most part, you don't see gang tags or a lot of gang activity in the city because our gang and drug unit is so spectacular. And we have an integrated system for how we deal with that, which the city's never had before. And then housing, you know, we built some partnerships and worked with some other nonprofits in town. And we've rebuilt more homes faster than any time in history in the city. So our housing stock is starting to come back, and we've got, you know, some huge changes to places like Chicago Drive and the Allegra Apartments on 3 Mile Road and things like that. So everything, when I look back, everything that I told the public that I was going to do, we did for the most part. There were a couple things that I didn't quite accomplish to my hope and desire. You know, we're still working on the hotel event center, and the Machinery Row redevelopment's got to happen yet, but you know, that we're working through those now. And so I feel comfortable about the fact that we said what we were going to do. Mm-hmm. And in this day of politics, you don't find much of that.
No.
You find it in the mayors, but you don't mm-hmm. find it anywhere else where anybody actually does what they say they're going to do.
Uh-huh. I do think some of that is that a position that's nonpartisan is you're much more able to do things, and you've written and talked about how you're able to do more as a mayor. And you know, I felt that same way on school board, because we knew each other's politics. We knew some were more conservative, some were more liberal, and yet a group that was all mostly male and mostly conservative elected me president 3 years. And you know, I don't think that would happen in a partisan atmosphere, because mm-hmm. we were always focused on the issues. So that assists in being a mayor, doesn't it?
It does. But I think the other thing is also that's where you see the success.
Uh-huh.
You know, when people are lobbing grenades back and forth, you're always ducking and covering, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're out there working on a nonpartisan level, I mean, I get it. Ironically enough, I always found it interesting that the Republicans said I wasn't Republican enough, and the Democrats said I wasn't Democratic enough. And I said, you're right, because I'm a mayor, I have to be pragmatic. Because the thing that mayors are dealing with now, which is something that they've probably, you know, really don't like dealing with too much, is they're cleaning up the problems of Washington and Madison.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we have enough problems in our city as it is. To have to clean up those two messes as well just adds to the burden.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that Madison and Washington, when their legislative groups go into session, the Republicans go in one group and the Democrats. I remember a state representative saying that he was so surprised, because how are you going to figure things out if you're both right. in different rooms?
Yeah, and the worst part about today is that if they do go and talk to each other, they get punished for it.
Uh-huh.
And that does not allow for good government.
Oh, I wish there was a way to change that.
There are. They're called voters.
That's true.
You start bringing in people that will actually start talking to each other, and they can change it.
Well, the public is saying that, so hopefully it's getting to them. Unemployment has changed pretty dramatically in your time. And what do you attribute that to?
Well, we took it and broke it down into three different levels. We said we're not going to attack unemployment the way that we used to, and we're not going to chase huge businesses with big money that, you know, can come and go as they please. So we started with the small entrepreneurship and rewriting all of our codes, ordinances, and policies internally to make sure that we're helping out small businesses. And at the same time, we started working to integrate small businesses into what was going on with the city and having them actually even apply for work that the city was doing. The second thing was we looked at the medium-sized businesses in town, and then we had a platform for the larger businesses that are there and the ones that are looking at coming into town. But what we found is the majority, the overwhelming majority of the effort that has caused us to get to that 4% unemployment is those small and medium-sized businesses. You know, we've helped 46 of them grow just as a city directly working with those companies. And, you know, I've got to give shout-outs to those folks. You know, when you look at Fisher, which used to be Fisher Precise, when you look at Delta Hawk, you look at even some of the folks in the inner city. We have a business on 17th Street, you know, that have just been, they've been not only working but rebuilding in the city and hiring city employees. There's so many companies that I could name, literally 46 of them, but that's how we've rebuilt it, because they just needed a little something to help them grow, and that's what we did. We worked hard to make them grow.
And you're working hard at attracting industry here, too. And
yes, we are, because people love the quality of life here. They love the lakefront. They love the proximity between us and Chicago and Milwaukee. And, you know, we're a great place for a lot of people. I mean, even Benjamin Brewery, they were down south of us here, and we're looking for something new. And we literally sat down and had coffee 3 hours after talking with them. And, you know, within 2 days, we had an agreement to move them into town. So you just got to work at it.
What's the status of the process to replace you, and are you going to endorse anyone, do you think, if they have an election?
The process is the city council president will come in and take over the term. We think that the council will vote to do an election right away. I can't imagine that they wouldn't. It'll cost a little bit of money, but the reality is otherwise you would have a mayor being elected mayor, and then within 3 months he'd have to run for office again, or she would have to run for office again. So I think what they'll do is they'll do the same thing that I got, which is about an 18-month term. And that's a reasonable amount of time to get your feet into this and get it wet and fully absorbed into it. The council's got to vote at a committee of whole meeting and a council meeting to do that, to move ahead with the election right away. But so that'd be about 77 days from my last day. That'd be about 77 days before a new mayor would be in. And I think just for good continuity and good government, that's the way to go.
Someone brought up a proposal to have a part-time mayor and a full-time administrator instead. Do you think that'll go anywhere?
No. The way that the city charter is written is it's a full-time strong mayor. I find it kind of ironic that person was the same one that wanted to be the mayor for a while, and then when he didn't get it, he wanted it to be part-time. I think that's what happens when you get a group of people that, you know, they don't like the administration, so what they do is they try to, you know, demagogue and downsize the government. You know, this is a full-time
plus,
you know, strong mayor position. So I introduced the budget, I introduced and have veto authority. And listen, if the public doesn't like you as a mayor, they're going to get rid of you. It's real simple. But to say you're going to go to a manager position actually takes the authority out of the community, because the community elects the person that they want to see, depending on what that person's doing, to then do that. If you put in a city manager to run the city, which it wouldn't be a city administrator, it'd be a city manager, because that's the only way that you can do it as a weak mayor position, then that city manager is a non-elected leader of the community. So you're actually, by talking about that, you're taking away the power of the people. And I think people want to have power enough to vote their leaders in and out of office. So, you know, Mr. Perez puts that out there, but I think he's not thinking enough about what the residents believe. And I think the power it should stay in the residents' hands.
Do you see yourself endorsing a candidate I really don't.
And the reason I don't is because I'm going into a position now where I have to work with the mayors no matter what. So I think it's best that I just, you know, stay aside and let the residents decide. Because the reality is, the only thing that matters is what the residents think. They're going to tell you who's going to stay and who's going to go.
Let's discuss for a minute the hotel convention project. First of all, maybe you could just let our listeners know, who may not be very familiar with it, what's the scope of that project and what would it provide for the area?
Right. If you look at the 10-year plan, one of the things that I had in there was a new hotel in downtown Racine. And for the last 8 years, what I've been hearing from the business community is we need a new hotel, a really nice hotel, and we need more entertainment downtown. Well, we'd also heard that from not only my residents, but also from the downtown business owners. So we've tried three different variables to this. I tried a regular hotel about 6 years ago. About 4 years ago, we tried at a higher end hotel. And then what we found was that the business community wasn't willing to give room guarantees. And if you don't get room guarantees, nobody's going to build a hotel. So the only other way to build a hotel, and Lord knows we have the need for it, especially given all the events that we have in Racine and all the conferences that our businesses have. The only other way to do it is to build something that adds on, that helps to fill the hotel rooms. And that's a convention center and an entertainment facility. So what we did was we said, well, okay, to get the hotel, we have to have the facility. So we'll look at doing both. I'm a little shocked the business community has not come out publicly for it. I mean, we have done more work and had more consultants and more reviews of this project than probably any project in the city's history. So all the data shows that this is going to be a success. And we just presented the financial data to the city residents, and we're talking about $11.61 a year for, you know, an average homeowner. You know, we probably pay just about the same amount for the Miller Park. And we're not going to get what we're going to get out of this, which is a 150-room, 3 to 3.5-star hotel, a residual income coming into the city of about $400 million over 30 years, 200,000 people a year coming into the event center, and the chance to do conferences, conventions, entertainment, sports, all of these things that people have been telling me that they want in the city. So to me, it's kind of a no-brainer.
And, you know, I think of the marina, and whenever we have company, we go take them. It could be at the ocean when you're on that beautiful beach, and it's just in the marina. It's incredible. And yet there was a lot of pushback, particularly west of the eye, to doing that project. And finally it went through, and, of course, largely to the strength of Len Olkowski, who was not reelected, it turns out. But the convention center as getting that same kind of pushback.
Len was a visionary, and that's pure and simple what it is. And I will tell you this, and the public needs to hear this loud and clear. For all you naysayers, go somewhere else. I mean, just move somewhere else if you don't like it, because the thing is this, cities are competing with each other every single day. And if you want to just sit there as a naysayer and say no to everything, then I will guarantee you right now, and I'll be willing to make a wager on it, your taxes will go up. Because every other city is building new opportunities. I mean, look at Milwaukee, the 3rd Ward, the 5th Ward, the downtown area. They are building hundreds of millions of dollars in new tax base, which allows them to lower their taxes. And yet people will say, well, I don't want any change at all. And as much as I appreciate the fact that people don't want change, if you don't change, you die. And if I've learned anything over the last 8 years of talking to my colleagues from all over the world, if you don't change, you die. So Oak Creek is growing, Kenosha's growing, Milwaukee's growing, Chicago's growing. If we want to sit back and listen to these naysayers, we will go right back to 2009, and we will go right back to high taxes, high crime, high unemployment. So we've created a pathway to success. And I will tell you, the people that will help us on that pathway are the millennials. These young kids who are coming here, working here, building business, being part of business, they want this. And if we ignore that and just say no because we want to say no, then I will guarantee you, come back in 10 years, and I'll tell you exactly right now where your unemployment rate will be, where your crime rate will be, because we've seen this game. And the people that are saying no right now are the same people who have said no to me on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If I listened to them, we'd still be back in 2009.
That's right.
So we've got to move forward. I think for every negative person I hear 10 to 20 people say,
good.
Build it, Mayor.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
This is fabulous.
Yeah, my sister lives in a small city in Missouri, and they have an event center in that city, and they use it for everything, and it's very, very impressive.
Yeah.
The planning has been exceptional for this, I think, and if our listeners go to cityofracine.org, they'll be able to see the plans for the
right.
for the center.
Right.
And the other thing is the marina has actually brought in money, has it not?
Yeah, since they built the marina, we've had in downtown Racine $54 million in residual growth.
That's amazing.
Since that. In Allenton, Pennsylvania, where we really saw this as a model, Allenton was far worse off than we are, and they were a steel town just like us. They built a $385 million hotel, convention center, arena, and then they had a bank building next door, so theirs was more expensive at $385. Since then, they have seen $1 billion in new development, $1 billion in a city that's smaller than ours.
Wow.
So when people say you can't do it, I would argue that you obviously have not been around the world to see what's going on in the world, and I will tell you, I'm talking to these mayors, I'm visiting these cities, and there is nothing but positive. The only places that they failed, and I've witnessed these too, is when they've built them out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the stadiums and convention centers failed, because they're out in cornfields, and you know what? Even though they're next to a highway, there's nothing else that attracts people to do anything else besides go to the center. So, you know, we feel very positive about this. We feel very good about this. And if the aldermen want to have the vision and the leadership to move this city forward, then I think they'll move ahead and do it.
Are they the ultimate decider, or will this go to the public for a vote?
No, you know, listen, we're elected to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else says,
mm-hmm.
well, you should go to referendum on everything. That's not why we're elected. If you do that, then you just get rid of government and do everything by referendum.
Right.
And that's the naysayers again. These are people that, you know, I find it ironic that the people that are opposed to this are people that when you look at their business and what they're doing, they're very unsuccessful and not very good at what they're doing. So I don't worry about those folks so much. I look at the fact that we're hired to make decisions. We have made tough decisions in the city in the last 8 years that have got us a long way into where we're going. And the aldermen have to have the guts to do it. When you don't have the guts to make a decision, you ask for a referendum.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you use the word vision, because I really think it takes a little vision to say, okay, we'll take this chance and we'll go out there. But when it's based on facts, as you noted,
yeah, it is.
You see the communities that have done it, and it's
mm-hmm.
it's amazing. Let's just talk a little bit about the position you're taking on. Was it very difficult for you to decide to take the new position? You'll be president of the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Cities Coalition.
Yes, it
is. You want to give people a tongue twister there? And I think they approached you for that position. Did it take a while for you to decide, and what were your greatest motivating factors and the concerns that you had?
Well, one of the things that my wife and my family and I have been talking about is, you know, we were kind of watching what we were doing on the 10-year plan and everything that we were doing. And the weight of the position is very difficult on your family. You know, your family deals with it every day just as you do. And as much as I brush off this stuff when people threaten me or say horrible things or whatever, I kind of brush it off and just keep moving forward. They have to take that still. They take it, and they take it to heart, because you're talking about your husband or your family, mm-hmm. your dad, you know. So it's been really tough on them, and they've literally grown up in this. I mean, my daughter was 5, my son
right.
was 8, and now they're 17 and 14, and my son's almost as big as I am. So when we talked about it, we'd been talking about, you know, should we run for a fourth term or not? Have we done the job that we've told people we're going to do? And we looked through the plan and realized that we had pretty much done everything. So Teresa had asked me, you know, what would you do if you got out of this job? And I said, I don't know, but I'd really like to do something in the water space
mm-hmm.
where I could really be a game changer in the water space. So when this opportunity came up, you know, it hit on all cylinders, but the offer that they made and the position and working with my colleagues and starting to work on more of a global level on the water issue, it was pretty hard to pass up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they made an offer that is almost impossible to pass up. Mm-hmm. And so I went and had a family huddle about it, and it was an immediate 3-0 decision, you know, mm-hmm. take the job.
And it was contingent, I understand. You have deep roots in Racine, I know. So it was a little contingent on your being able to live here.
It was. And, you know, the commuter train runs down there. It's not a big deal. I don't mind the trains at all. I love them, actually. So that was easy. But it was very... it was very difficult to leave the position because we're in the midst of,
right.
you know, all this stuff going on, and there's still a couple projects I'm working on. And but, you know, we've got great staff at City mm-hmm. Hall. We really do. I have hired some amazing people. I should say we have hired some amazing people. And I have all the confidence in the world. And I'm hoping what happens is that the community comes together to help out. Like you said, I'm not going anywhere, but I don't have any hesitation whatsoever that they will do a great job and mm-hmm. get this done.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, leaving a little early,
right.
it's still a little tough.
A little tough, yeah. When do you begin in that new position?
I'll be beginning fairly shortly.
Okay.
We've done some conversations. I've had some meetings with them. You know, been back and forth to Chicago a couple times to try to transition. But we'll be doing a transition at City Hall with the interim mayor.
Okay.
He wants to have some transitional time to kind of get used to everything, and I told him that I'd be happy to give him that. So we'll be working it out, you know, and shortly we'll put out an announcement as to the last day.
And that interim mayor can also run for mayor then?
He has decided not to.
Okay.
It was one of the first questions I asked was, do you want to run? And he said nope. He said he really wants to just do this, and he wants to continue on.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking when you said that about taking the train to Chicago, you'll probably spend less time every day taking the train to Chicago and back than you would have going out to all the community events you go to and all the extra things.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, when my daughter said to me, you know, Dad, so when you get home at night, are you going to still
stay?
Go to meetings? And I said, no. And she said, but are you really going to be here for weekends? Are you going to, because... She always says, your weekends off are two events on Saturday mm-hmm. and one event on Sunday. And she said, so she challenged me on this quite a bit. You know, are you really going to do this, Dad? And I said, no. I said, you guys, you know, you get Dad back.
I know.
And they said, oh, well, then take the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very simple for them. Take the job.
That's great. I know that you were quoted as saying the time is right and the cause is right. Could you tell our listeners the compelling part of that for you? Mm-hmm. What is it that the time is right and the cause is right?
Well, we've had a transformation in Canada and the United States where you had President Obama, who was incredibly supportive of environmental issues, and the Prime Minister in Canada, who was a little bit more conservative, and then you had this big swap. So you've got Trudeau in Canada, who's incredibly supportive on the global climate issues as well as the water issues. And President Trump, we're still trying to determine as mayors where mm-hmm. he's going and what he's doing. So that, and then just the fact that because I've, you know, the governor kept me on the Coastal Management Commission, which
okay.
I was very appreciative of Governor Walker for doing that. And then I sat on the U.S. Conference of Mayors Water Council, so I dealt with national issues from every coast on that. And then with the U.S. Conference with the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, I worked on more of a global level on the Great Lakes issues and clean water, drinking water issues. And I will just simply tell you that all of that has allowed me to see a good chunk of what's going on in this world. And the water issues are not good. The drinking issues are not good.
Except in Racine.
Well, of course. But, you know, the Great Lakes are the key to the growth of this country as well as the future of this country. And when I see all the data that I've seen that people just don't get a chance to see all this, I thought to myself, if somebody doesn't jump in and start really hammering these issues in the education and advocacy, then I'm going to feel guilty of myself for not doing that. Kind of the same way I did when I was mayor. I jumped into the campaign because my wife said, go fix it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought, well, I'm gonna try to do that. I'm going to try to go in there and see if I can do that. Same thing with the water now. Everybody takes this for granted.
Yes.
And they can't because it's a very fragile resource. And our job and our goal as the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Cities Organization is to work with the mayors and be advocates to start teaching the people of just how fragile it is and why you can't make decisions lightly.
Yes. And you said there's 1% regeneration of water per year in the Great Lakes, and we're using far beyond that.
Yeah, we're using, and they're talking about tapping into the Great Lakes for everything putting water out to the West Coast to, you know, 125 communities around the Great Lakes. The Waukesha diversion isn't being fought because it's a Waukesha diversion. We don't like Waukesha. We love the people of Waukesha, and I really I'm a big fan of the mayor out there, Mayor Riley. He's a good guy. It's that it changes the precedent, and that is our concern, mm-hmm. is that it allows the courts now to fight the battle of whether you should tap into the Great Lakes or not, and there's over 100 communities looking at doing that. So then we lose control of the issue, and that's our concern. We lose control of the issue, and it becomes a court issue, or it becomes a congressional issue, and Congress starts deciding where the Great Lakes waters uh-huh. go. It doesn't take a lot for a catastrophe to happen on the Great Lakes.
Yeah, look at, you know, even Flint, Michigan. Could that happen here? Of course, we have had very good success with the cleanliness of our drinking water.
We have, but what happened in Flint, Michigan was bad decision-making. And when you think about the fact that in essence, you know, broadly, that was done to save about $100,000, they will be spending well over $2 billion in lawsuits alone on that project. So a $100,000 bad decision cost you $2 billion mm-hmm. in the long run. It's those types of decisions that we have to avoid if our taxpayers and our children and our future are going to be okay going forward.
Mm-hmm. I remember when Obama was running for office, and there were a lot of people, of course, running, and one of them spoke about how the Midwest is just awash in water, and that, you know, that's going to have to be diverted to us. And I know that's that'll be a huge issue for the future, too.
Yeah. I always tell everybody, if you're having problems, then move up here. Don't tell us to move the water down there. You just move up here. Trust me. I got plenty of places in downtown Racine I can put skyscrapers up. So, you know, come on here. We got plenty of room. It's just we got to go up instead of out.
And I know you've spoken to a number of groups and in Washington about the fragility of the water and the importance of it for the future growth. And you said that your scope of influence will increase as you move into this position.
Yeah, we've already had conversations. We had a Milwaukee Leaders Summit sponsored by the Water Council up in Milwaukee, and I got a chance to talk to Yuri, who is one of the creators of drip technology in Israel. And we're already starting to set up some tours to go over to Israel. We're setting up to do some work with the mayors in this region and start solving major problems like the Mami Valley, which creates, and the people here can't imagine, but in Lake Erie, when the algal blooms grow, imagine Lake Michigan for 21 miles out being just pure pea soup. Mm. And you can't swim in it, you can't be near it. They're finding now that there's respiratory problems from the fumes coming out of it. You know, our people can't imagine that, but that's not something that they shouldn't ignore. Lake Erie has major problems. We have algal blooms in southern Chicago. We have algal blooms in Lake Winnipeg and Green Bay. That's why I talk about the fragility of this. We have a great resource, and we're blessed with it, but we also work very, very, very hard to keep it that way, and we have to work even harder going forward if we're going to protect our kids' future.
Mm-hmm. So, Mayor Dickert, you are so good at verbalizing what so many of us feel about the importance of the environment, about our community. Do you see yourself ever running for elected office again?
You know, the funny part about it is I don't plan on it. I'm a man of faith, and I believe that there's a path for you. So, you know, I don't worry about that stuff so much. There's been a lot of people have been asking. But I just, when I ran for county board when I was 22, I ran on a passionate issue that I was upset about, and I ran and I won. And I ran for state assembly a couple times because I thought that, you know, it's part of the regular ladder, right? I'm supposed mm-hmm. to move up the ladder. And I didn't do it for passion, and I lost twice. And when I ran for mayor, I ran because I was passionate about, as my wife said, go fix this. You know, we were in a really bad position. And I ran because I thought, I can do this. I can mm-hmm. fix this stuff. So when this job came up, you know, I think it was a bit of a calling, you know, that, okay, this is your next step. So I don't I don't plan my future. I believe that, you know, God will provide a path for me, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So I just go into every job and say, what can I do to do to change this, to make this better for my kids, to make this better for the community? And I don't worry about tomorrow so much. Mm-hmm. You know, I just work hard for today. And and if something comes up and it's right and I'm passionate about it, I'll think about it. But I don't look at it that way. Mm-hmm. So, I just take every day as it comes.
I felt that way, too, when I ran for school board. I think sometimes people run. Like, I came out of this PTA thing where we just worked. You know, we'd have pizza sales. Yeah. We'd get computers for the schools. And I think some people are more hands-off and some people are more hands-on. And you're definitely one of those people that goes in and does the work. Along the way, a number of things have happened that you probably were almost serendipitous. And I thought of that when I was looking in the paper thinking, you know, what should I ask about? And there are so many stories every single day. But the tiny house story is kind of interesting, isn't it?
It really is. And that is a story that I hope what people realize is there's nothing that really I've done that has made Racine great. It's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you try as a mayor just to lead and push people when they need a little push, but we are a great community of amazing people who do great things. I mean, I look at Carrie Hemig, and she was passionate about, you know, young women being enslaved in prostitution and sex trafficking, and she created, literally, this woman created the Anti-Sex Trafficking Coalition, which she is now not only leading on, but she's changing the way the state looks at this issue. With tiny houses, Fiona Murphy introduced me to this gentleman who'd called me a couple times, and I really didn't know him, but he was telling me about all these ideas he had. I met with him once, and I thought, well, can this guy really do it? And then Fiona, who's a good friend of mine, said, listen, you need to listen to this guy. He's making a difference. So then I go see him a couple months later, and I see this production that he's got going on, Volunteer All to Help Veterans. And he's a non-vet. And I come from a Marine Corps family. So I thought to myself, wow. So then he says, you know, I've got this vision to do this. And I thought, okay, here's a guy with vision. So Jeff and his team, and he's got a great team, Jeff and his team started working on this stuff. And I thought to myself, there's a gap. There's a gap with veterans' homelessness, because veterans don't want to go to homeless shelters because they don't think they think that's better for somebody who's really in need. They don't see themselves that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this gray area with veterans. And Jeff had a solution. So we brought it up. And the federal government, to be honest with you, neither Veterans Affairs or the housing organizations wanted to deal with it.
Mm.
Because they said, we want veterans to get into housing. Well, what we found was that they have sometimes PTSD and mental health issues. They're not going to go into housing or homeless shelters. So we started working on this project, and it took a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And between Jeff and his team and Fiona raising money online, this thing just went gangbusters. So I did the only thing that I thought I could do. I helped to shepherd this thing through the city, because we had to literally create ordinances, because we had no rules on this. This was the first of its kind.
Mm-hmm.
We had no rules. But the second thing was go out with my family and help build them. And we did. We had, you know, days
That's
and
amazing.
Weekends where we were out there cutting and, you know, screwing walls together and putting up insulation. And then we got to meet Zach Giffen from Tiny Home Nation.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, you know what? I'm on my way out. And I've been part of this U.S. Conference of Mayors for a long time. So I'm going to demand something. I'm going to get my last, chip in while I can. So I called them and said, you guys, I want this on the veterans homelessness agenda, and I want to present it, and I'm coming out, and we're doing this. And they said, you got it, Mayor. So we went out and did the presentation in Miami, and they knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
This thing went viral, and it's going viral. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting communications every day from people saying, well, how do we do this? Where do we get it? How do we meet Zach? How do we meet these guys? And our goal of this now, because we, you know, I told Jeff, I said, all right, this is going well, so we have to create a new goal. And he said, you know, what? And I said, I think we should build these here. And I think we should build them, you know, right in Racine. And he goes, well, let's use homeless vets, and we'll train the homeless vets. Well, Milwaukee Tool came down. They're providing us with all the tools. They're an amazing group of people, I will tell you. So now what we're looking at doing is making this a business where we build the tiny homes and ship them to the other communities that need them with homeless veterans. So now we're on this track to try to build something newer and even bigger. And, you know, this all started with Jeff and his team and Fiona and Zach coming into town. So it's not me, it's them. They're the ones that are the true heroes here. And the fact that we can put vets in their own home and, you know, they can get a quality life they deserve, this is what job is all about.
And I read online that it kind of started with Obama talking to the mayors about do what you can where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Every year when we were with the Obama administration, we'd meet at the White House. He would do his press thing, and then he would lock the doors, kick all the staff and press out, and then we would talk one-on-one. And the one year, and you know, being a veteran of my father and my brother, both being Marines and veterans of my family, you know, he said, you guys, general term, you men and women, you have to get me to zero in homelessness on veterans. I don't want to see a single veteran homeless. Well, this is your commander-in-chief speaking, right? And this is something near and dear to our hearts. And as soon as we got out of that meeting, we started talking about how. And that's what I love about the mayors. We didn't say, hey, you're a Republican or you're a Democrat or what's your idea or what's your idea. We just started talking about how are we going to get this done. And we've been doing it ever since. So these presentations from the mayors down in Miami was what they were all doing to get to 0% veterans homelessness. So that's the amazing thing about the mayors. It's what it shows you what we can do when we work together. We can accomplish anything when we work together.
And I see that that tiny homes thing is even someday expanding to how we help the homeless. I just read this book, Evicted. It's wonderful, and it's about how home is where you start from. This time went really fast. I just wonder if there is any last thing you would like to say to the community or say about your accomplishments while being mayor?
The biggest thing that I want to say is thank you. There have been a lot of people out there who have started with us and continued with us to build this community. And even though they've got a lot of stones and comments thrown at them, they stuck in there with us and they did an amazing job. So to all the people out there, and they know who they are, I want to say thank you, because what I tell them is, because of you, we have made a dramatic impact on the city of Racine from where we started to where it is. And from the residents, to the people, to the NGOs, to the business sector, to the nonprofits, thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart, because you have made a difference in the world. You have made this place a better place to live, work, and play. And you can't thank people enough for that.
Thank you so much, John. You have done an excellent job as mayor, and we're just proud of all of your work and what has happened by people coming together.
Thank you.
I'm going to end with a quote of yours. My Racine roots are six generations deep. I'm proud to call Racine home, and I want all of the families here to feel the same. And so I thank our guest today, the Honorable Mayor John T. Dickert, for working so hard to help all families and individuals in Racine to have a better quality of life. For your tireless work and your vision, and for being with us today, John, we thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing with us your time this Saturday morning. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, and I hope that you will join us here at WGTD every Saturday morning for this program as we explore the important subjects that touch our communities, because as we all know so well, community matters. Take care.